Well, the world is a dumpster fire. Nothing here makes sense. And you vacillate between crippling fear and constant self-defense. And nothing's right and nothing's good. And you're paralyzed with grief. Don't kill yourself, just have a cup of coffee.
Welcome to Coffee Over Suicide, the dramedy podcast about mental illness and choosing life over death, one cup of coffee at a time. I'm your host, Chris Parker Howard. And today on the show, I'm so excited for you to hear this. We have got the amazing, the wonderful Angela Marshall. And if you're not familiar with Angela Marshall, I can't wait for you to get familiar with Angela Marshall, because she's just full of insight and wisdom and laughter and joy. And that is exactly what I want to talk to you about right now. So settle in for a minute, just for a minute. Before we get into the conversation, I want to talk to you right in your ears about joy. When was the last time you expressed joy, like really loud and free, in public? I was walking around today with my earbuds in, like you do when you're an isolationist. Every once in a while, I remember to take them out and just listen to nature and just be a part of things. I think that's important. That said, I was walking around listening to a podcast, and something came in that made me laugh. And my first instinct was to feel embarrassed that I had laughed out loud. Now, for one, laughter is kind of embarrassing, but in all the right ways, because you are being forced to push air out of your face in a happy way. If you think about it like that, it sounds bananas, but that's what's happening. Something strikes you to the point where you're making a noise with your face involuntarily. How amazing is that? You know, think about it. While you're out there in public, on the treadmill, on the bus, in your car, in the shower, I hope your shower's not public. If it is, good for you. Be brave. But do this real quick. Just do this, if you would, and tell me how this went. Just go, ha! Let out one big ha, and see what happens. See what happens. Because honestly, the purpose behind this is twofold. For one, if you're afraid of doing something like that, it's always good to confront a fear that's not dangerous. It's always good. Your brain will reward you with all kinds of endorphins and things like that. It doesn't know that you didn't jump the Grand Canyon. It only knows you check something off the list. So, you get delivered a king-size reward for a fun-size effort. Plus, the exclamation of joy is so rare these days. You know, there's a lot of gloom, a lot of doom, and a lot of it, quite frankly, is earned. Things aren't necessarily great in all places, but you know, some of that can be changed by you, by your day-to-day. There are certain things that you have the ability to adjust in your environment, in your life, with your own actions. So, I want to run an experiment, and this is going to seem absolutely crazy to some people, but wherever you are, whatever you're doing, in 4 seconds, I want you to laugh with me. Just one big laugh. Can we do that? All right, let's do that. 4, 3, 2, 1. Ha! How fun is that? You know what? I feel like we're best friends now. We've been through something. We've gone through something. Tell me how this went for you, or if you did it. I'm really curious. There's a very big need for joy and laughter and happiness in the world at all times. Even when things are going right, you can never have too much. So with that said, I'm about to give you another dose of joy. And this is a double shot. Angela Marshall. She is an ex-NFL wife who has survived herself in spite of going down into the darkness. She came back out. And you know what? She came back out like a real champ. And you can too. Let's let her tell how it happened. Let's talk to Angela Marshall. Hey, there you are. Now I can see you.
Now you can see me.
Excellent.
How are you?
I'm doing great. Today's been a pretty busy day, so I apologize for the short answers. I was just in the middle of 400 things, just all coming in all at once.
I understand. That's how productive people are. I get it.
Yeah. Hey, that's awesome. So first things first, let me just say hi. I'm so glad to have you here.
Yes. Thank you. I am truly honored to be here.
So tell me a little bit about you. First of all, where did you grow up?
So I grew up in Augusta, Georgia, mm-hmm. which is, this is still home. I just, traveled to promote my brand and my business.
Yeah.
From here to there. Yeah, different places. But Augusta is my home. Been, born and raised here and bred and all that good stuff. So, yeah.
Yeah, nice. And growing up the way that you did, mm-hmm. In the 70s in Georgia, I imagine that's pretty fascinating.
Oh, yeah, all of that. That is correct. I grew up a little, I don't know, what word am I looking for? It was different, I guess, if you would, because I was light-skinned in an all-African-American environment. So it made it a little difficult for me because I actually was the oddball out, so to speak.
Yeah.
And so it just, I can't really say that caused confusion in me. I think it was more so when I went to school and there were others that made me more aware of that than I was aware of it, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. It's funny too, because like my friends that would have to go through that, there was always that thing that, I never understood that. It was like, because honestly, it's there's not really a whole lot like that culturally for me,
Right.
It was just like everybody was all just some vague shade of beige or pink, Find out that there was, that there was even a stigma around being light skinned was something that, like, I had to be educated on by friends. Like, no, it really is a thing. And I'm like, what?
It is.
Really?
Oh, it is. Yeah.
And especially in the 70s, in the middle of, the whole Black Power movement and everything.
Yep.
Not even the middle. I mean, it's still going on today. But I imagine that was something that I guess it would have been interesting. I mean, how did your family feel about any of that? Was that ever even a discussion?
Well, within my family, it wasn't, because I was accepted.
Yeah.
It was what it was, which my mother had, a light-skinned child.
Yeah.
But no, it wasn't my family per se. Now, as I got older, I had some cousins, of course, that would kind of pick on me from time to time and make it really hard for me, obviously.
Yeah.
But, being different, I guess, from everybody else, it's just like with anything else. If you have any sort of abnormality or flaw on your skin or outward appearance, people tend to stare.
Yep.
And they wonder, what the difference is. So I think it was pretty much the same. The school that I attended, though, from elementary school, it was mostly blacks. Mm-hmm. And of course, you know, me being the light and bright, it was a little different because people didn't really know, I guess, how to take me, whether I was white or black or whatever. But mostly I was accepted. You know, it wasn't that it was an all bad experience, but I use that as a part of my book and as a part of my platform, because I know that there's a lot of people that are going through that. And I'm gonna tell you something, even as an adult, my skin complexion is still a hot topic.
Really?
Oh yeah, it's still a hot topic. You know, there's so many people that feel like, I guess, you know, men, especially black males, African-American males, when they succeed or they make it, you know, they tend to go lighter or white.
Yeah.
When they're females, with the, you know, the person that they choose. I mean, you know, I'm just being real about it. I'm being very transparent and very honest. And so over time, it's just really caused a lot of friction, I guess, for me internally, until, you know, one day I just decided, you know, as I started journaling and writing down my feelings, especially from the standpoint of people always assessing what my life was like as an NFL wife, that really burned me. I don't know if you can see, I'm really passionate about that, because yes, you know, there was a lot of glitz and a lot of glamour, but there was also a lot of pain and a lot of, you know, just personal different stuff that I went through, that I really was in a dark place, but I had to put on a mask. I had to put on these layers of being happy, of being pretty, of being bold, of being family, of being wife, you know, all of this stuff. And inside I was really, you know, I was really just dying. So I think from the standpoint of now me being an adult and still being faced with that whole stigma of light skin, light-skinned female from time to time, it does. I will say it. I shrink to that little, you know, 8 to 14 year old age. It is so funny because I feel her too. Like I feel her coming on, and I have to enter. Like I have to tell my mind, stop it. You know, you are confident. You are bold. They have the problem. Their problem is not with you. Their problem is actually with themselves.
Yeah.
So.
So how do you find yourself in a position where you decide that you're going to take all of these things that you've learned and you're going to start passing this on and paying it forward to others?
Well, I'm going to be honest. It wasn't an easy task, because anytime that you open up your life and you are vulnerable and you start being transparent, you are like this a target for people to just pick you apart. And it's so funny because I'm like, how can you pick me apart about my life? How does that happen? Like, I'm telling you how I feel, how I felt, what I did, what I didn't do. How can you even dispute that? But, you know, I guess in the words of, well, I forgot his name, who used to be the boxing promoter, Don King. Don King. It's the American way. So it's the American way for people to be judgmental, to be critical, you know, to just have their own perspective and their own prerogative to believe or not believe. It's okay.
Yeah.
For me, when I decided to pen the book, you know, I just really wanted to just free myself from a lot of, you know, lies, a lot of deceit, a lot of just internal, you know, pain and hurt that I had been feeling for a lot of years. Even though on the outside I shined bright, but on the inside I was tarnished and I was hurting. I was in pain. And, you know, you could tell that just from my relationships, because, you know, certain relationships, friendships would kind of wean and fade and fall. And, you know, and it wasn't necessarily them. It wasn't necessarily me. It was just I had not dealt with everything that I needed to deal with as Angela Marshall, you know.
Yeah.
So once I decided, I'll tell you this, once I started going back over my journals, and, you know, about all, and I had written out how I felt, all my different emotions about different things. It was at that point, as I started reading it, I don't know, it was like weights or heaviness was being lifted. And then I just started saying no more, you know, trying to put on this facade for people, or trying to put on this, you know, these, in the words of my grandmother, trying to put on airs for people back in the day.
Yeah.
No more. I'm just going to be free. And then as I started reading my journals, I was like, wow, like if it's freeing me, I know it has to, you know, be freeing and be helpful for other people as well. So that's why I decided to become this target, to become this bullseye for, you know, everybody to, if I say something about the story and life of an ex-NFL wife, that's a, you know, a target. If I say light skin, that's a target. If I talk about, you know, being depressed amongst having millions of dollars, that's a target. I mean, yeah. You know, everything I say nowadays is scrutinized, but I'm okay with that. I'm tough. I'm a big girl.
Well, and that's the thing that I think a lot of people don't have an understanding about when it comes to, you know, feelings of anxiety or depression or self-worth or anything like that, is yes. that regardless of your circumstance in life, if you've got a lot of money, you can buy yourself some really great distractions from dealing with those feelings.
Yes.
But you can't buy your way out of those feelings. You still have to feel them and you still have to get through it. So what
Absolutely,
was your?
Because I was going to sleep and waking up with them every morning.
Yeah, and I mean, was that your process to just distract yourself from it for a long time?
Absolutely, absolutely. Because far be it for me, you know, as a person who was perceived to have it all, mm-hmm. far be it for me to complain or for me to have, you know, any type of problems or to put my burdens on someone else. Because I've always been that person. You know, I describe it as, what is that that emergency electrical strip that you have where you have all these different outlets or yeah. things? It's like everybody, I was that outlet. Everybody was plugging into me and was zapping me or being energized from me, from my wisdom, from my works, from my money, from different things, you know, just plugging into me. But then when it was time for me to get energy or get, you know, some sort of focus or love back, there was none.
Yeah.
You know, that's where it kind of falls, I think falls short, especially when you are a natural giver. So for me, you know, just being a natural giver, I tend to let people plug into me a little too long from time to time. But you know, it's all good. Like I've said in a lot of interviews, even if, you know, someone were to say, Angela, based on your life right now, from then to now, what would you do differently? Nothing. I would go right back, do it all over again, because, you know, it's priming this woman that you see before you today that is just able to, you know, walk in her truth, identify with her truth, and then help others in their truth.
Yes.
I wouldn't say anything.
Yeah, when you're lucky enough to come out the other side of something like that, it's very rewarding because you find that all of that agitation, you know, it makes lemonade. It can really turn you into something that's galvanized and a lot stronger than maybe you would have been if things had been easier. But,
that's right.
You know, that's not to say that the adversity is always fun.
Oh, yeah.
Sometimes it feels dangerous.
That's correct. Adversity and adversaries are never fun.
Yeah.
However, I do believe, you know, and that's one of my content that I preach on or that I teach on is about turning stumbling blocks into stepping stones.
Yeah.
So it's just a matter of taking those blocks. And, you know, sometimes I may have to put it in the front, on the side, you know, sometimes I may trip over it a couple of more times before I actually turn it into a stepping stone. You know, that's just a human. That's the human side of me. But eventually I will turn it into a stepping stone, no matter what, you know,
yeah.
like that's my goal. No matter how many tears I have to cry, no matter, you know, how many times I have to scream or I have to beat up myself. Because a lot of times what I found, though, Chris, is that it's not necessarily the outer that I'm fighting, it's inner.
Yeah.
And that's always been the case, because even when I became suicidal, it wasn't like my ex was so horrible, that lifestyle was so horrible, like I was living in, you know, from paycheck to paycheck. That was not my case. Like, I had an abundance of things. Mm-hmm. And I had family, I had friends, you know, I mean, I had things, but mentally and emotionally, I was not secure. I was not stable. And it's kind of like I turned on myself, you know, if that makes sense. And I don't
know
how,
it makes complete sense.
I turned on myself and it was like, woe is me. I have the worst. I'm the worst person ever. I'm worthless. I'm useless. I have no value. I don't add value, you know, and again, like, I don't know how it all snowballed and became as great as it did. But I'm just so thankful for my daughter and, you know, for the spirit that led her to come at that particular time and just help me through what I was going through. You know, because I had not, I hadn't talked to anybody about just how heavy and how weighted I was feeling during that period in my life. And I will admit, even now as an entrepreneur, you know, as a woman, as a friend, as a mother, it's still sometimes those weights, whew, they get day-to-day life gets so heavy, Chris. They get so heavy.
Yeah.
But I found that the more I smile and I'm just like determined to break free and break through and break over, break out, you know, then I'm able to knock those walls down, because I'm constantly like putting up walls in front of myself and doing things. Nobody's doing it to me. I'm doing it to myself.
But it definitely sounds like there's a unique amount of struggle that you've had to deal with that such a fraction of people will ever know what that's like. Tell me a little bit about what it was like in the beginning of being an NFL wife, because that had to be a really unique experience.
Well, I will say this. It was very scary for me. And I think it was scary because I just did not have my own identity. So I think when you lack your identity,
right,
It's a problem. Like if I had known, I had just a little bit more confidence when he and I walked that walk together, it would have been different.
Mm-hmm.
But going into it, like I describe a time in my book where I'm dropped off. My mother-in-law actually drops us off at the airport. And then after she leaves, I'm bawling. Like you would have thought I was getting ready to attend a funeral because I'm crying so bad. Like, well, oh, you know, I'm intimidated. I'm scared. I'm afraid. I don't want to leave friends and family behind. I don't know what I'm walking into. I don't feel, you know, I don't feel poised enough. I don't feel wise enough to just walk amongst the elite of the elite, you know, only having high school education and having two children out of wedlock. Because at that time, we still weren't married.
Yeah.
So not knowing the dynamics of all of that, it was just, I think a lot of things were just weighing heavily on me. And then just stuff from my childhood that had carried over. I still had not dealt with that. So all of that was a weight, a tremendous weight around my neck. And I'm just sitting there bawling. And this lady, it was so funny because, well, it's funny now, but this lady, bless her heart, she was like, oh, my God, baby, what's wrong? And I was like, I'm okay. I'm okay. I'm just, you know, I'm leaving my family for the first time and all this other kind of stuff. And she was very consoling. And, you know, she tried to entertain the children because, of course, our two children, they were much younger, like 3 and 5, I think, at the time.
Yeah.
Or 2 and 4, something like that. And, you know, they weren't really sure why mommy was crying. And then they had toys and stuff to play with. So they weren't really paying me that much attention.
Right.
But it was very scary. And then after we got into it, like I met, you know, some wives, met the husband, started attending games, started attending functions. I was just really robotic, if that makes sense. It wasn't like I ever felt like I fit or like, you know, I started like standing boldly, taking my place. That just, it just didn't happen. You know, I was still that intimidated person, you know, that walked into it in 1992, that was just like, you know, from 1994 to 1996, I was just this bundle of, I don't know, just of weariness, of helplessness, of hopelessness, for absolutely no reason, because at any given moment, I could have just, bam, changed my mind and decided, you know what, I'm going to live. Like, this is crazy. Why are you replaying all of this crazy, you know, this stuff in your mind and in your heart when most of it probably wasn't even true anyway? And if it was way past time to let it go.
Yeah.
You know, if that makes sense. Yeah.
But I think the thing on that could be that, you know, when you tend to have a lot of adversity and you start building yourself up to be the kind of person that you're going to be when you're handling things. And you have that adversity and you have, you have challenges and struggles that you've got to work through. When those obstacles are taken out of your way, sometimes you find that you're left with things that you've put off, especially when it comes to dealing with mental health issues. Was mental health ever anything that was discussed among your family?
No, No, not at all. You know, I think that's like a taboo word. Anytime you talk about therapy, counseling, people are like, whoa, wait a minute, are you crazy? You know, that's the terminology.
Yeah.
But that's not it. It's just that sometimes your heart and your head, your spirit, your soul needs something more, whether it's a little more attention, a little more focus, a little more affection, a little more security or reassurance at that time. You know, it's not about whether or not you're crazy or you can't really handle life. It's just that at that particular moment, you want, you know, you just want to know that you're going to be okay and that you have people around you or surrounding you that cares enough to make sure that you're going to be okay.
Yeah.
But no, my family never really talked about, you know, talked about those things. And to this day, they still don't, you know, they don't talk about counseling or therapy. I'm probably the only one that will say, oh, I need some counseling or I need therapy.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's okay, because I think that once you remove, when you can safely and confidently remove stigmas like that, then you know that there's true healing and there's true help. So now with being able, anytime that I'm able to express my feelings or just talk to someone about my feelings, about my emotions, oh yeah, it's always a help. Or when I can read something that is, you know, that will help release me, when I can hear something, hear a song or a motivational video, inspirational, you know, video on YouTube, or some of those amazing, you know, awesome speakers that are out there, anything that will kind of just push me, press me and propel me, you know, from what I'm going through. So, yeah, I think that if counseling was offered for Arthur, that's my ex-husband, and myself, he probably, you know, because he was definitely shallow and vain, so he probably would not have wanted to do it, because, you know, God forbid anybody thinks that, you know, he's not this perfect person, right? Or any of us, for that matter, aren't this perfect Penny, perfect Pete, you know, that's what we're supposed to be. But, you know, now, oh, yeah, I do it now. I do it in a heartbeat, because I think that anything that is going to help me and that's going to heal me and make me a better person, because overall, like, that's my goal. Like, I just want to be the best version of me that I can be to help, you know, not only help myself, but to help others.
Yeah. I mean, that's a really inspiring, amazing story. To get through and to put yourself out there like that, I believe me. I mean, even just looking at things from a statistical standpoint, the places that you've come from, you know, a woman, African American woman in America, the demographics in that for suicide and depression are very, very low. And I've had it kind of explained to me in a few different ways, like why that would be the case. You know, why it's the lowest form. I had one friend, who had told me it's because, he told me it's because things are so bad, you know, as far as relations go, and as far as like the way that you've got to fight to keep yourself forward, that, you know, people don't have time for that shit. And, and the other thing that I've heard is that the highest statistic for suicides and depression is middle-aged white men. And the reason for that is because of white privilege, because they have a certain amount of expectation that they think that life is supposed to turn out a certain way. And when it doesn't, they feel like they've just failed, because I'm supposed to have all of these things.
Okay.
So,
and you know what? I can accept both of those perspectives. Absolutely.
What do you think about that? I guess I'm just curious what your thought process on that is.
Well, now, when it comes to African-American women, we are taught to be strong. We are taught to be superwoman, Wonder Woman, Catwoman, Batgirl, all wrapped up into one.
Yeah.
So, you know, no matter what happens to you, you're supposed to pick yourself back up very quickly, or don't even look like you've fallen.
Yeah.
You know, like, that's the facade. Don't even look like you're falling. Don't, you know, don't cry. Don't let them see you, you know, be weak. Don't let them see you be weary. And I agree to a certain extent. Now, as far as being vulnerable with, let's just say, haters or people or negative people that want to see you fail, absolutely. You know, I'm like, no, I'm good. I'm good. Even if I'm like bubbling inside, I'm good. I'm okay. But when it comes to like my real friends, family members, people that I know that really and truly care about me, yeah, I think that we should be more vulnerable and we should be more truthful with what we're going through, because, you know, that's the only way to heal. And when people don't know, they can't help you.
Yeah.
So from the standpoint of it being low, I think that, you know, that whole just stigma follows the African-American woman, because, you know, first of all, we're already said to be bitter, to be mean, to be bossy and all of that stuff, which that's not true. That's the furthest from the truth. I think that, you know, just the no nonsense just comes from like years and years and years in the lineage of having to force ourselves to be strong in the face of adversity. But, you know, sometimes it gets hard. It gets really, really hard. Now, as far as like white males, the statistic that you just gave me for suicide for the white male, I find that a little difficult to believe that theirs is the highest, you know, suicidal.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I can see when you say as far as, you know, the reasoning behind it is white privilege or, you know, having that entitlement.
Yeah.
Because I can see that being a reason why. Yeah.
Well, I had to look that up because when I was told that, I said, no, there's no way. So I had to look up the statistics, and it was pretty alarming to me. In America, we actually have, you know, rather high suicide rates and depression rates. You know, and that's not even to discount people who are not suicidal, just people that have a general level of depression going on, because depression, it's dangerous. It's debilitating. It can make your life less wonderful than it has the potential to be.
Absolutely. And there's a lot of us walking around with it. That's for sure. Because
absolutely.
Again, from my standpoint, how people look at me, even to this day, things that are, you know, that weigh a little bit more heavily on my heartstrings or weigh a little bit more heavily on me. You know, people they have no idea, because, again, they see the outer and they're thinking that, you know, everything is okay. And I be like a mess on the inside, but I will say, now that I know better and I'm able to do better and I can, you know, control my mind, which, you know, that's one of the messages that we have to get across in today's society, is that being able to just have self-control and mind control over yourself, you know, being able to just put up the blockers and the blinders and the, you know, whatever else that will remove what people say, what people think, because, you know, we learn that very early, like, you know, how to just pick people apart or criticize people. And then it makes you feel inadequate or it makes you feel less than.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
You know, I think once you know that, once you start walking with head high, shoulders back, and you're like, I don't care what kind of shoes I have on. I don't care if Vogue says the color of the year is blue. I'm going to wear green, you know, and you're OK with that. You're OK with being different or being unique and being, you know, being who you are supposed to be, as opposed to who everybody wants you to be.
And that takes a lot of strength and a lot of presence of mind and courage. And even asking for help when you come to a place where you recognize that help is something that you need, that takes a lot of courage and a lot of strength. And so I think that, you know, coming forward the way that you have and sharing your story with people to say, no, this was something that was a courageous act and ultimately the thing that I needed and very valuable to me. And I think that you can do it too. And if you think you have to, there are people out there who are going to be a rock.
Right. That's right.
That's awesome. What was the first thing that led you toward, let's say, you said that you were journaling. Is that right?
Yes. Yes, that is correct. So journaling, has always been a form of therapy for me. It, you know, even when I was younger, I just didn't know that it would have the impact that it does as far as like being able to free me. You know, I just thought I'm just writing out my feelings because I'm mad I'm a kid. I wouldn't dare say it to an adult, so I'm just going to write it. Yeah. You know? So that was my purpose then. And then, of course, as you get older, you're, you know, just kind of you're sad and or you're overwhelmed with things and you still want to kind of get your ideas out on paper or pen or whatever. But, yeah, from the standpoint of me having, I guess, that aha moment or that wow moment, it was just a combination of things. But I think really what set the tone for me, and I'm saying this on another interview that I have that's going to deal with cancer. Not, I don't have cancer. My mother had cancer, and she eventually died from it in 2013. And this sounds really, really creepy, but sitting bedside, watching my mom for 3 months deteriorate the way that she did after her bout with cancer, because she was diagnosed with cervical cancer and it eventually metastasized to her brain. But I promise you, Chris, sitting bedside with my mom and every day that I had an opportunity to look at this once, you know, fierce and feisty woman just deteriorate the way that she was, and just knowing how she lived her life full and free and just filled and fulfilled every single day, it did something to me. And I think the last night, because we were afforded one final conversation, and then she slipped back in a coma, never regained consciousness, and then she died 3 days later. But I held her hand literally every night for like 3 days, for 3 days, three nights. And it's almost as if her life was just like, transferring into me, the life that was left was transferring into me. And I just, you know, when I got the phone call that morning, on that Sunday morning, that she had died after I went home, because she waited, I guess, until I left, because I was there. They were checking her vitals. She was good and everything. In like an hour, I left to go home to shower and then was going to come back. And then I got the phone call right after I got out the shower. But it's like when I got the phone call, of course, I was overwhelmed and I was saddened, but I felt this shift. I felt free.
Yeah.
And it was like free to be me. So I think that at that point, was sitting with my mom, sitting bedside with my mom and just experiencing all of that. It did something to me. It made me understand, just one, how important life is. To how short life is, because my mom, if I'm not mistaken, I think she was like 62 at the time.
Oh, man.
Yeah, she was 62 at the time of her death, and I'm 47 now. But from just that whole experience, it opened my eyes, it opened my mind, it opened my heart. But then it's just like this light, like this beam of light that was saying, okay, Angela, what you gonna do? You know, you're going to continue to sit on a bench, or you're going to get off the bench and get in the game. It's all up to you. And so I decided to go from being a spectator to a motivator. And it was at that point where I told myself, you know what? I don't care. Like, I'm pulling away the masks. I'm taking them off. I'm taking layers off. I'm just going to be transparent about my truth from now on. Somebody asked me about my life, you know, I'm going to say, you know what? NFL life, it provided a lot of comfort, but it also was chaos. It was chaotic internally for me, not on the outside, but internally for me, it was chaotic. And this is why. These are some of the things that I went through, you know, and if I can save a life or save lives, just with my testimony, with my journey, with my message, that's, you know, I don't care about the fame or being this poster girl for story in life of an ex-NFL wife. I just truly want people to, one, live vicariously through themselves. I want them to, two, I want them to learn how to do those positive plays every day. And then three, and the most important is, I want them to learn how to convert downs in life to wins. Because it's those downs, you know, and I'm using that sports terminology because I've been around it my entire life. But being able to convert the downs in life to wins is huge, because you're going to have downs. You know, as long as you have breath, there will never be a single moment or single time where you will not have adversity, or you will have troubles, or you will have... No, it's just not going to happen. It's just a certain level. Level may be one, then the pain level is going to be 10. You best believe it. So it's just about giving them encouragement, empowering them. You know, I just use my motto, illuminate, motivate, celebrate, and liberate. Liberate people so that they can be free and just understand what it's really like to just walk in your truth, you know, every single day.
Well, and that's the great thing about truth is that once you start living honestly and speaking honestly and deciding that you're going to be the kind of person who's going to tell the truth all the time, it becomes intoxicating. And,
yes.
You know, you can't help but tell the truth and live honestly and be honest.
Oh, yeah. And that's why as I go on more and more shows, I divulge a little more. And then it's funny because I get asked the same things when people request interviews. They're like, is there any topic we should stay away from? And I'm like, no, I'm an open book. It doesn't matter. Now, when it comes to my ex-husband, there's certain things because that's his life. And I always tell people, you know, during the period where I was with him and there are things that went on with us, I can absolutely talk about that. After that or before that, you have to get his number. You have to interview him because then it becomes a story in life of an NFL player, not wife, you know.
Right.
But no, I know exactly what I signed up for. It's ironic because my publisher, when I, you know, did the book and we were like my editor and we were going over it and they were like, are you sure you want to do this now? Because, you know, once it's in print and once you put it out there, that's it. Your life is going to forever not be yours. And I was like, well, it's no different. It wasn't mine anyway in the beginning because I was just pretty much existing. So why not? Let's do it. Push the button. Go ahead on and upload it. And it is probably top five in my life of one of the best things that I could have ever have done for myself. Absolutely. No regrets, no remorse. If I had to release it 1,000 times more, I'd do it 1,000 times again.
So how do you discuss these kinds of things with your kids now?
Well, our children are 29 and 31, so it's not difficult now. You know,
right.
It would have been, yeah, if I would have released it many, many years ago, I think there would have been some. But the thing about it is that our children were privy, and they should not have been as children, but they were. They were privy to a lot of our dysfunction and, you know, disagreements and whatnot. So they pretty much knew. But what they didn't know, obviously, about me, and I don't know how much their dad has shared with them, was just certain struggles that, you know, that I went through. Mm-hmm. So now as they hear certain interviews and they hear certain things, you know, they may make little comments, but, you know, they're really, my children aren't fazed by my life. They're self-centered. They're selfish. They're living their own lives, you know. But I think that certain things that I do talk to them about, just as far as relationship-wise, certain things that I see with them, how they impart maybe discipline or, you know, correction or wisdom to their children.
Yeah.
And I can see myself a pattern where I did it wrong and I can kind of step in to help them out. You know, I'll impart stuff like that to them. I'll, you know, kind of lovingly suggest, hey, you know, I know I probably did that to you, but it wasn't right then. And it's not, you know, it wasn't right then and it's not right now. So I try to be that parent that one, takes ownership, take responsibility, take accountability for the mistakes that I made, you know, as a parent, as a mother to them, and then just try to guide them, you know, in a right way.
Well, that's good information for anything, really. I mean, taking ownership of the things that you've done and finding yourself in a place where you can be honest with yourself about what you've done wrong, what didn't go right. All of that really matters when it comes to taking personal responsibility for your life and not being a passive participant in your own life.
Correct. That's right.
Well, this has been absolutely amazing. And I cannot thank you enough for coming on and doing this. And thanks for talking to me today.
No, thank you for having me. And anytime that I am afforded the opportunity to just tell my story, you know, and especially like I mentioned before, tell my story from different sides, not from, you know, like what society wants it to be or how what they look and how they've assessed it, but what it actually is. And, you know, if I can do that 1,000 times more and just give hope and give help to other people, sign me up, you know, sign me up to definitely be, I don't know what it is, be that sacrifice or be the, you know, whatever it is, because it's not a big deal. I know that everybody, we're all human and we're all walking around with different things that we struggle with, you know, struggles, strengths, weaknesses, you know, value. And it just, it's not a big deal to me anymore to just take the supergirl or superwoman cape off and just become very, very, you know, very vulnerable. It's just not, I don't care. It's all good. So thank you for having me on Coffee Over Suicide. I really, really appreciate it. And I look forward to us collaborating more in the future. And
absolutely.
You're in Colorado, my old stomping ground. So if I'm ever out there, I'm gonna look you up.
Oh, you better.
Absolutely.
And there you have it. The amazing Angela Marshall. If you want to find out more about her book, and I know you do, it's called Reality to Rags to Riches, The Story and Life of an Ex-NFL Wife. You can get it in hardcover on Amazon or in Kindle. It's available all kinds of ways. You can ask your favorite bookseller to put it in stock, and if they don't have it, don't cause a problem. Just ask them nice. They'll probably get it for you. Otherwise, you can also find her all kinds of other places. Like her website, inotherwordsbystone.com, or Facebook, Wise Words Woman, Words by Stone on Twitter, and In Other Words by Stone on Instagram. And as always, don't kill yourselves out there.